You're locked into the only podcast for Maine high school basketball. The biggest names, past and present. It's Big Time Hoops, the podcast, right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Big Time Hoops, the podcast. And this is as big time as it gets. We got Nick Cannon-Medley joining us on today's episode of Big Time. And Nick, I'm just going to start the episode the way I've been starting it with everybody else. What's going on with life the way it is right now? What are you up to? Obviously back home right now, but how are things are for you right now?
Yeah, so I appreciate you having me on. I am back here in home in Portland, Maine. I have a daughter who just turned 5 months old yesterday. So she's kept my hands full over the last couple months. I returned from my season. I played in Japan this year. I got home the beginning of March. Middle of March. And the season over there got suspended and then ultimately canceled. So I came back to Maine and I've been here since. Staying in shape, working out outside. And just really enjoying the time. The silver lining for me has been enjoying the time with my daughter and just being there every day, just seeing every little part of her growing up so far. It's been pretty cool. So just laying low and, trying to follow the guidelines and, kind of stay home has been my approach for the most part.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that you just came back from playing in Japan. That's where you were this past season. So I want to kind of trace your journey and how you got there. So we're going to go back to the beginning. So obviously raised in Portland. Just curious, growing up for you, it's a little bit different than kids in small town Maine who grow up around the same kids and you kind of go up through the ranks with them. In the city, you're surrounded by guys where you're constantly competing with them. So what was it like coming up in the city for you with all the talent in Portland?
Some of my best basketball memories started, elementary school, middle school, and high school. I was fortunate to come up with, a great group of players, with Jamal Caterina, Walter Phillips, Rob Pillsbury was a little bit older than me, Chris Markwood. We had a really talented age group, when I was growing up, Jason Levesque, Brian Wohl, guys from Westbrook. So competing with those guys, with some of my best memories. And I think one of the biggest differences between then and now is we played outside all day, every day, from elementary school through middle school. And even in high school, we played all day. I mean, we'd play outside and we'd put the car lights on, the hoop that we had out front of my house. In the wintertime, we'd wear gloves and play. I mean, we just played so much and competed, and it was great. It raised my game, and so growing up around that group of players was a great experience, and definitely was a major factor in my development as a young age.
Mentioned playing outside a lot growing up. Where was the best place to get a run in Portland growing up?
Hands down, it was Payson Park. When I was in middle school, late middle school is when I first started to go, and there was guys. Charles Mason, a guy that did Tiger. There were some guys that came to Maine from out of state, who a couple of them played overseas. So it was older guys. It was grown men that I was playing with and against when I was eighth grade and then freshman year, sophomore year. And at that time, when you went to Payson Park, if you didn't get there by 3 o'clock, it would be very difficult to get on. There would usually be four or five teams. I mean, there'd usually be upwards of 50 guys at the court, and if you lost, you were done. So that competitive type of environment where if you lost one game, you were done for the day, you weren't going to get back on the court. You'd have to bring a correct team and you'd have to really compete. And playing against older guys was a major part of my development as well. I mean, I tried to always play against older and better players when I could, and having that opportunity to be able to go and play outside, was unique, at least compared to now. Because basketball is not a game that's played outside very often anymore. And that for me was fundamental to my roots as a young player.
You mentioned some of the guys that you played with in high school. So obviously you were on a stacked team, you, Walter Phillips, Jamal Caterina. Just curious, One of my earliest memories I have of Class A basketball was the game you guys played against Deering Bangor and just seeing your team and how stacked you guys were. What was it like in the city at that time? Like, was it all about bragging rights? Like, were you guys going against these other schools in Portland and just was bragging rights a thing back then? Like, were you guys ultra competitive back then?
Yeah, very, very competitive. And again, I'm not as hands-on because I've been out of the country for, you know, and when I went to Maryland, that was 19 years ago. So yeah. I don't want to take away from anything that's culturally going on that I don't know about now for young players. But when we were young, we were friends with the guys from Portland and the guys from South Portland and the guys from Westbrook. Friends, you know what I mean? But, you know, there was a very, very competitive environment between South Portland, Deering, Westbrook. And so, you know, we took it very, very, very seriously. You know, if we had games coming up, we weren't talking, we weren't buddy buddy. You know, we didn't all play together on the same AAU team, so we didn't have those same type of relationships as teammates. So it was very competitive, you know, and it was absolutely bragging rights, and I took it very, very seriously. You know, when I was in high school. You know, when I came into high school my freshman year, Jamal Caterina was the man. You know, he was – when I was in middle school, he was the man. When I was – you know, he was 1 year ahead of me. And really all the way up until he graduated, he was the man to a certain extent. You know, my junior year I had a really good year, but, you know, he was always the bar for me. He was always somebody who pushed me to get better. And, you know – so we were super, super competitive and wanted to win. And you know, I think that I see now that a lot of really, really friends. And I don't know how competitive it is, but when we were playing in high school, it wasn't that way quite as much.
You mentioned Jamal Caterina being there right in front of you and just kind of being the guy, kind of setting the bar. Curious, what was the biggest adjustment or the biggest thing that changed for you going from junior year and senior year to him not being there anymore and you having to be the man? Like, what was the biggest thing that you saw growth in with his departure?
I felt prepared. I mean, I prepared for that opportunity for a long time. I mean, I was playing on Jamal's team since I was in third, fourth grade. You know, we played on traveling teams together. We played on middle school teams together. And we played on high school teams together. You know, and I was preparing for that opportunity to really be able to take on the responsibility of being the guy on the team, you know, and I was excited about it and, you know, feel like I was prepared and you know, I owe a lot of my success at a young age to Jamal and how much it drove me to work and to improve and to prepare myself for that moment. I think I had a really good senior year, and I think that, you know, part of learning how to be the second guy was really instrumental in moving through the rest of my career, because you're not always, when you get to a high level, you're not always the guy, you know, and it's hard for a lot of people when they come out of high school as top recruits to adjust to not being the guy and to have that humble sort of mentality. I was always humbled by the guys that I played around. I never really felt like I was, you know, the best player. I felt like I always had to prove that. And that was part of the mentality that I carried all the way through. I always had a chip on my shoulder, and that made it really easy for me to work, because when you don't have everybody telling you you're the best, it's a lot easier to get up in the morning and work your butt off. So that was, you know, all that process was huge for me in my maturation as a player.
Obviously, it paid off because you went and played at the next level, not just at the next level, but the defending national champ. So just curious, what was the recruitment process like? You know, how early were you getting looks? What were some of the schools that it came down to before you made a decision?
Yeah, that process for me was pretty awesome. I mean, it was, you know, some of the coolest experiences that I've had as a player. After my sophomore year, I went out to California. My dad is from Los Angeles and grandparents live out there. So I went to a camp called Pump and Run, and it's two brothers, Dana and David Pump, and they were really high up in Adidas at the time. Them and Sonny Vaccario were very close. And so I went out to their camp. My dad said, look, you want to challenge yourself against some of the top players in the country. And as soon as I got to that camp, they came over to the court that I was playing and said to my dad, look, we're going to the the Adidas Big Time camp in Vegas. Does Nick want to come? And my dad didn't even ask me. He was like, absolutely. Of course I did. You know what I mean? They geared you up. I mean, duffel bags of Adidas gear and all this stuff. And it was new for me. And I loved it. I embraced every minute of it. You know, and so after I went to Vegas Big Time, my recruiting process really, it started pretty intense. I mean, I was recruited by Kansas, Connecticut, Maryland, North Carolina, and those were some of my final, and Missouri was one of my final choices because I really liked Quinn Snyder. And I was getting hundreds of mail, hundreds of letters, calls, I mean, all the old school stuff you hear about, like stuff from USC that like the whole, the thing would just be like cash falling down, like picture cash with a US dollar sign C. You know, and it was pretty intense, that whole process. And after my start of my junior year, and throughout my whole junior year, I went and did visits at all these places. I visited UConn. I visited Maryland. I didn't end up visiting Kansas. Once I went to Maryland, I knew that's where I wanted to go. And then I committed after my junior year. I actually committed before my senior year. And then I went for my official visit. So it was, I got to really experience like the cliche recruitment process. You know, I was getting all the letters and all the calls and all that stuff. And so that was a really, really memorable experience for me.
So you mentioned some of these camps that you were going to where you kind of got the exposure and kind of got your name out there. You remember any of the guys that were at those camps you actually went head to head with? I mean, I'm guessing, I mean, this was the national scene. So it would have been some decent individuals that were there. Do you remember anyone in particular that you went and battled against at those camps?
Yeah, I mean, my class was LeBron was a big guy. It was a big competitor for me. He played on the Oakland Soldiers, and then he actually played with us Pump and Run for a tournament. So I played with him and played against him. And then I went to the ABCD camp, which that and the Nike camp were the two biggest camps in the country. I went there the summer before, I think it was the summer before my senior year, and LeBron was there. Sebastian Telfair was there. At that time, Lenny Cook was the guy who was in New York City. And I actually made the All-Star game at ABCD. And that was where I went from being, you know, thought of as a guy from Maine who was maybe a top 100 recruit to being considered one of the top high school players in the country. You know, and I went in there and playing against LeBron, playing against Lenny Cook, playing against these guys, was an incredible experience and built relationships with these guys. I've still trained and worked out with LeBron and some of these guys, you know, down in Miami. I have a house down there, and over the years have been able to work out with some of these guys. I built a good relationship with Kevin Durant, you know, Chris Paul. These were all guys that when I went to camps, I also went to Jordan's camp out in Santa Barbara. He would bring in the top 20 players from the country. So I got to go out there and you know, not only spend time with him, but play against him, play with him. You know, he would bring guys out on his yacht. I unfortunately can't go on boats. I get super seasick. So I missed. I went one time on a sailboat that he had. And that was probably one of the most embarrassing experiences of my life. Man, I'm completely green. I'm just done. And he tells me to go downstairs. He called me Kaner. Kaner, go downstairs and just look straight at me. Right? Man, and it's only 15 of us, him and this guy named West. He goes by World West. He's a big, big basketball figure. Kind of behind the scenes, and you know, and they just got a kick out of it. But I mean, those experiences at his camp were unbelievable. Interacting with him and you know, playing with him and playing against him, guarding him was in the moment it seemed relatively like after you get over the shock of it, it seemed relatively normal to me. Like being around him a lot, you start to get comfortable, and then after, obviously, looking back on it, it's incredible. But those camps definitely helped with my confidence and put me on the map.
Real quick, Jordan question. Did he post you up at all? Did he hit the fadeaway jumper on you at all? And is it as tough to defend as it looks on TV?
This guy would get the ball at the top of the key. Wouldn't, I mean, first of all, he wasn't passing at all. There was no passing. And the thing that I respect so much of him, and you see when people have watched this, the Last Dance documentary, is this guy was so competitive that even at that, I mean, of course, these are younger college players, but he was calling guys out, guarding guys at half court. And a lot of guys dip that because they don't want to get embarrassed. They don't want to, you know, a young guy, a young Darren Williams or Chris Paul or any of these guys to do anything in front of hundreds of kids and their parents at the camp. But he would take that challenge on, and he would, you know, obviously was dominant. But what he would do is he'd get the ball at the top of the key. He'd call out who was ever going to guard him. You didn't decide who was guarding him. He'd just be like, you know, CP, get over here. Kaner, get over here. He'd get it at the top of the key, and he'd just turn around, and he'd just back you down, going, you know, very, very slowly. He'd get you to wherever he wanted to get you, and he'd throw sometimes four shot fakes. And he wasn't even – it looked just so easy, and then he'd just fade away. And the guy would shoot 90%, you know, in these games. He rarely missed. But in retrospect, it was just an unbelievable experience. Obviously, the most incredible experience of my career is being able to be on the same as him and be able to have my name even come out of his mouth is pretty special.
Even if he was mispronunciating it, right?
I don't care. He could have called me fit. I would have been fine with it. Yeah. Excuse the language. He could have called me anything under the sun, and I'd have sprinted right over there.
Absolutely. All right. So next question I got to ask is: you went to Maryland, and there's footage of a little scuffle in some off-season, looked like just pickup games, and you're in there. Was that your first introduction to Maryland basketball? That little fight, the Steve Blake? I think it was Gilchrist, right?
Yes. So we went before the summer, even before my freshman year, we went in to get ahead of some, start taking some classes because you have less of a class load during the season, obviously. So we went in there before my freshman year. So I had just finished my senior year at Deering, and I was still 18. And we went down there and stayed for a month and took some classes and stayed in the dorms. And Blake took me right under his wing, as well as John, because John was my roommate. And that was probably the first or second day. And the one thing you can't really see in the video is that this was with, you know, 200 kids, you know, from like 8 years old to 13 watching, idolizing, you know, this guy, Steve Blake, who just won a national championship. But, you know, behind closed doors, guys who have success are so competitive, you know, and so that's what it was. It was, I just won a national championship. You're coming in here because John always had this aura to him where he was very, very arrogant. You know, he was very, very self-confident, which was part of his success. And, you know, these guys were going at it a little bit. You saw how it all went down. And for me, the reason, in retrospect, why did I break it up? You know, I should have let it go. You know, if I had to do it all over again, I would have let it go. But first of all, I respected Blake so much. And I saw John with a quick right buckle him a little bit. And John was my roommate. And Blake had taken us under his wing. And I'm like, if this goes any further, and God forbid this doesn't turn out well for Blake, he's not going to want to mess with us anymore. He's not going to come pick us up anymore. There's going to be this, you know, this disconnect. And so I just jumped in real quick to break it up because I just didn't want to see the guy who'd taken me under my wing, under his wing. And then my roommate, but there was a lot of that, man. There was a lot of those things behind closed doors as a college player and a professional where there's a lot of those things that happen for sure.
So obviously anytime you jump in level of play, there's an adjustment period, you know, speed of the game, physicality, skills, stuff like that. What was the biggest adjustment from going to play Class A Maine basketball to ACC basketball? I mean, obviously you went to these camps, so you had that exposure playing against some of the top players in the country, but what was the biggest adjustment for you that first year in college?
The first thing, everything had to slow down for me, you know, because it was extremely surreal for me to be in warmups with 50. I mean, the Comcast Center had just opened up. It was a brand new arena, 15, 18,000 people. So it's hard to explain when you first go onto the court and you're in warmups and you're on the bench knowing that you're going to go in the game. It's sort of an out-of-body experience because you're going so much off instinct because you're so – everything's going so fast, and I'd never been in a situation like that. So it was a very out-of-body experience the first, you know, couple games. And then I got used to it as I saw my first shot go in, and I – you know, started to kind of get adrenaline going. I was able to calm down. So I think the speed and just ultimately being able to learn how to relax and learn how to channel my energy, and also learn how to come off the bench. I came off the bench for two or three games and then I started the rest of my career, but it was definitely, that was adjustment. But I think the biggest adjustment was the structure. When you play high level basketball professionally or at a place like Maryland, you go from being the guy who has the ball in your hands all the time. If you miss four or five shots in a row, you don't think twice about it, to having really structured offense and having a coach in Gary Williams, where if you're making a mistake, you're hearing about it, you're coming out of the game. You know, so it was never really like the stage. It was more the micro details of, you know, learning how to play in a system. Maryland had a really, really structured system. And ultimately just, you know, adjusting to having the ball in my hands less and having a different role. I mean, I was obviously a scorer my senior year and had the ball all the time. And then all of a sudden, you know, you might get four or five shots in a game as a freshman. So it just is adjusting to having to be efficient and how to operate when you get on the court.
So for those that will never get a chance to experience, which is probably a lot of us, biggest difference from a Class A basketball tournament game to an NCAA men's tournament game? Obviously, you guys got there your freshman year, I know, right?
Yep.
What's the biggest difference?
The NCAA tournament's interesting because it's a neutral site. So you can be in these big games. I mean, we even went, my freshman year, we went to the Sweet 16. And then my sophomore year, we went to the Sweet 16 or round of 32 and lost to Syracuse. But we won the ACC championship my sophomore year. So the gyms are a lot more, there's a lot more energy and a lot more noise and a lot more hostile environments when you're playing in, you know, on the road or at Maryland. Because when you go to the tournament, you can be in a game, you know, in the early rounds, and it's not until you get in the end of the game, it's such a big arena and there's sections for all these different teams that are there. So it's not as loud. It's a lot more quiet. And so it's a little bit of a different environment. But then when you get, for example, the ACC championship or the Sweet 16, when we played in the Sweet 16, we were at in San Antonio in an arena that was like a football arena. So it could have held a few hundred thousand people. So just adjusting to that environment, you know, but it's, you know, there's a lot of pros. I mean, there's really no cons. The pros are you get so much energy from it. You get so much adrenaline from it. Motivation level is like no other because you know the stage you're on. You know that every little thing you do is under a magnifying glass. So just a fun environment to play in because, you know, every little thing you do is generally appreciated as long as it's good.
Absolutely. So obviously you came in as a freshman playing for the defending national champs. So that's got to be a great feeling right there. That's quite the ride right there. Looking back on the 4 years of Maryland, though, what's like the moment that sticks up the most? You mentioned having to come in and play a role as a freshman. Obviously grew into an all-conference player. You know, looking back, well, what's that moment that kind of stands out for you that you'll talk about 20, 30 years from now?
I think a lot of it's the road wins. I was talking to a couple of my teammates. We did this thing, I think it was either yesterday or Monday. We did this kind of recap of that run with a few of my teammates and Gary Williams. My sophomore year, we went down to Florida when they were the number one team in the nation and beat them on their court, and that was an incredible environment. And then my junior year going, we went into Duke and beat Duke on their court when they were number one. And so those are the ones that stick out the most. Obviously winning the ACC championship, but I had two of my best games of my career at Florida and at Duke. So it's just incredible when you see how much attention those games get because you're in the moment, you know, for example, the game at Duke where you kind of get in a rhythm. I think I had like 25 and 12 or something like that. And then after the game, you realize, man, a million people just watched this game and you know, USA Today and all the Sports Center and, you know, I'm getting 1,000 texts and, you know, it's really surreal, you know, because you're so in the moment and it's, you know, it's basketball to you. And at that point I was really comfortable in the environments, but I think that when I look back and remember kind of those moments going in those hostile environments and winning in the face of that type of adversity, when the stuff people were saying in those environments, and to win, and not only win, but, you know, have a really good game, is something that I'll always remember for sure.
I remember the Duke game. I remember watching that one. That sticks out in my mind. Like, I vividly remember watching that game and just you going off. So 4 years in Maryland, and then obviously you're still playing pro ball now. So going into the draft, like, did you have realistic expectations to be drafted, or did you kind of know you were probably going to have to go the undrafted route? What happened right after your senior year?
I thought that the draft, I was really surprised. I felt like I should have been a first-round pick. I mean, I wasn't really even considering not getting drafted. I was all ACC 2 years in a row. I was one of the, you know, only players in Maryland history to do a little bit of everything. And I think it's like more than 1,000 points, 500 rebounds, 250 assists, 100 steals, 50 blocks, one of only five guys to do it. And I went into the pre-draft camps and played very well. So I was really surprised. I mean, I was really, to this day, it's something that I really can't accept, to be honest with you, because I feel like I was really put in a box and I was unfairly stereotyped as a white guy who played on the wing, you know, because my athleticism and ability to play the wing was questioned. But in the NBA draft, I was top five in the draft as an athlete. They take the vertical, the sprint, the lane slides, and then they take an algorithm to, you know, who's the top five athletes in the draft. And I was a top five athlete in the draft. So to me, why are we doing these metrics if I'm a top five athlete in the draft, but then I'm told that my athleticism was going to be questioned to play at the next level? So I expected to get drafted. And then when I signed with Detroit, went there in summer league and broke my foot, the second game of summer league. And they had told me and my agent that I was going to, you know, sign a guaranteed deal. And that they took a guard in the second round instead of me, because my agent had sort of guaranteed them that I'd go to summer league with them. And that wasn't the case with this guy, Will Blaylock. So that goes on a lot in the second round. If teams feel like they can get you on their summer league team, they'll take a guy who they're not sure if they can, because a second round draft pick is an unguaranteed contract anyway. So it really doesn't mean anything if they're not going to ultimately sign you. So I unfortunately broke my foot in the second game and was out for 9 months. I missed my whole first year, almost my whole first year as a pro. But then I went back to summer league and had some great years. I mean, when I was with the Clippers, it was me, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Eric Gordon, and Mike Taylor on the starting five. And the only person who had more double-doubles than me was Blake Griffin. I damn near averaged a double-double. And these are guys that started the next year in the NBA.
Right.
And the Clippers, Dunleavy said that they had Steve Novak on a qualifying offer, that they wanted to bring me to training camp, and they thought that I'd make the roster. But meanwhile, I was offered a really big contract overseas and had to make a decision. And then I kind of just got in the mindset where I was pissed. I'm like, what's going on? And it really kept a chip on my shoulder. And again, it's something to this day that I really can't accept, because I felt like I did everything that I needed to do, and I felt like I was unfairly stereotyped. I felt like the fact that I was a white guy who was 6'7" and, you know, wasn't doing, I don't know what I needed to do to prove athleticism. I felt like I was a pretty athletic guy. And my defensive ability was questioned it's pretty crazy to me, man. I definitely, it still bothers me to this day, because, I think that what I did in Europe, and you compare that to what other guys who've been in Europe and played in the NBA and had a lot of success, you look like a guy like Luka Doncic. I did a lot of similar things as Luka did in Europe, and Luka's, you know, now one of the top players in the NBA. So it bothers me to this day. I'm a really competitive guy, and I loved my career in Europe. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But to be 100% honest with you, man, I think it was complete BS. That's just the competitor in me. But I also think men lie, women lie, numbers don't. And I did everything that anybody who, I mean, there's guys who were in the NBA who played in my era who I just killed. you know, on a consistent basis and had a much better career, but they, you know, have a little bit longer arms and they're 1 inch taller and they look the part. And so I guess they passed the eye test and I didn't, you know, and that was something that to this day that bothers me. But it drove me, man. I'll tell you, the 14 years of my career in Europe, there's not a workout that went by that at least one point in my mind, I felt like I had a chip on my shoulder because I just felt like I was something that was a lifelong dream was robbed from me. And I felt like I was unfairly evaluated. And to this day, I've been fortunate to build relationships with some of the guys over the years that made some of those decisions. And I'm relentless with talking shit to them about it. you know, and the feedback that they all give me is the fact that my team didn't make the NCAA tournament my junior and senior year, which was also complete robbery. I mean, we're the best team in ACC history to not make the tournament. That's when they just started with mid-majors making the NCAA tournament for the most part. And then my senior year, the second best player on my team failed out of school halfway through the year. So there was a lot of factors, but when I went into my draft interviews, they all wanted to know, you know, look, you're an elite player from a huge organization. It was a red flag to them that my team didn't go, you're an all ACC player, but your team didn't go to the NCAA tournament. That was a major, major red flag. And then I also was arrested when I was in college for something that was unfortunate. And I had a couple off the court things, a couple of competitive things. I had a mix up with a guy on the wrestling team. I had a mix up with a guy on the football team, just being young. And now that I look back, those things, look, if there's any question in your mind and you're a guy who's supposed to end up being the guy they don't have to worry about, let's keep it 100. When you're the white guy, you can't be the guy they have to worry about.
Right.
So if you're a guy who's been arrested and had some off the court issues and your team didn't make the NC tournament 2 years in a row, and there's only 30 guys or 40 guys who are going to be picks, they're going to probably go the other way. And they had reason to do so. You know, it's stuff you look back on and you learn from and you mature from and, you know, you share with young players and hope to not only inspire but be able to, you know, help guys with the decisions they make. Because little decisions, things that you think may not have any, you know, consequence end up, you know, sort of being – can change the path of your career and your life.
So you mentioned, like, the disappointment kind of fueled, you know, the success you've had in Europe. And you mentioned going to a couple summer leagues – you've been over there for a little while. So I'm curious at what point and what went into the decision making to just be like, I'm just going to ride this Europe thing out. I'm just going to stay here and just pursue it over here versus, you know, trying to make summer league teams and making training camps and stuff like that.
I mean, that's a great question. Every question you've asked, man, are some of the biggest decisions and biggest thought stream things I had to go through throughout my career. And for me, what it really came down to is, you know, I'm going to go where I'm appreciated. And it was kind of, for a while there for me, it was kind of an FU thing. You know what I mean? Like, I kept on getting teams wanting me to come back for unguaranteed contracts, even when I was 25, 26, 27, and started to have all Europe years. And I was the runner-up MVP. Complete robbery, man. I mean, I'm just, I swear I'm not making excuses. I mean, I just... They gave it to a Spanish guy who there's no way this guy should have got MVP. But anyways, I'm runner-up MVP, and teams were still at that point courting my agent to get me to come back. And I even got a few really, really partial guaranteed contracts. But meanwhile, I'm getting offers that are life-changing. You know, and at that point, I'm like, look, you know, I was like, what more can I do? You know, and now I want to be where I'm appreciated. I don't want to go somewhere where I'm going to have to – it's going to be a dogfight for me to get 3 minutes, you know, where I'm somewhere where you got 15,000 people chanting your name and people appreciate you. And the hard work is completely, you know, you see the fruits of the labor. And then also I started to invest. I started to do things off the court. I started to understand money and I started to understand, you know, for my future, for my family, for, you know, goals that I had off the court, that I have to make decisions with the short amount of time and the unguaranteed amount of time that I have as a pro. I have to make decisions for the long run. And again, although it may sound like I'm salty about things that happened early in my career, that's the competitor in me. That's me just being honest from my heart about the way that I saw it. and the way that I feel like it went down. But ultimately, those things made me better. They made me a better man. They made me a better person. They humbled me. They took my work ethic from very, very good to unmatched in my mind. And so that was the reason why I'm still playing it, about to be 37. And that's the reason why I've had the career that I've had in Europe, because there's levels in Europe, right? There's the NBA of Europe, and then there's the pro semi-pro leagues in the States, right? I mean, there's levels, and I've played at the highest level over there for a long time. So I feel like my hard work paid off, and at this point, I don't have any regrets at all.
So I got two questions now. So you mentioned being 37, so obviously closer to the end of your career than the beginning of your career. So how much longer are you trying to do this for? I mean, obviously, you got to still be feeling physically good if you're still going out there putting in the work, and obviously still loving what you're doing if you're doing it. And two, you mentioned wrapping up in Japan, probably going back to Japan as well, I'm guessing. Yeah, people probably don't think of Japan as a place to go play basketball. They think of China or Europe and stuff like that. So just curious how you wound up in Japan and what people can expect once you get back over there.
Yeah, that's another great question. Well, first of all, I am still motivated and my body still feels good. And I make decisions off the court at this point with my diet. One of the biggest things I want to be able to share with young guys is how much that affects the trajectory of your career long term. I'm very disciplined with my diet. I'm disciplined with my training, and that's given me a longer runway. So I'm not going to go back to Japan. I'm going to opt out of my second year there because it just wasn't really a good fit for me. At this point in my career, what I love about basketball is communicating and being able to be a leader and being able to be the vet for the younger guys, like guys were for me when I was coming up. So I just couldn't communicate there. It's different. I learned Spanish, and in Europe, the common language, because there's guys from all over the world, is usually English. But in Japan, man, it was completely all Japanese. So in the games, you couldn't communicate. In the locker room, you couldn't communicate. In practice, you couldn't communicate. So it didn't have the elements that really I'm passionate about at this point. So I went there because the money was right and it was the best offer I had financially. And that's a factor at this point. I want to be able to, you know, use my resume and what I've done to be able to take full advantage of the financial side. And so that was a driving factor of me going there. But I think that I'm going to have some offers in some situations that may not be quite as much money, but I'll really enjoy it a lot more and enjoying it. And my wife being comfortable. Now that I have a young 5-month-old, you know, I want them to feel comfortable as well. And so that was part of the decision. So I'm not going to be going back. I'm going to be a free agent as of July 1st. And then I'm just going to see kind of how some of these leagues shake out. Cause some of these leagues, Spain might finish their league. Germany, some of these other leagues are finishing up. So I'm just going to see what the options are and, you know, go with the best situation.
All right. So I got one story I want you to tell me before we get up out of here. And I think I read it. I think I saw this correctly. So when Kobe passed, I think you had posted a picture of you and Kobe from Rucker, right?
Yeah, man.
All right. So at the time, this would have been early 2000s. Kobe's coming off 3 championships. Rucker Park is the premier basketball in America, right? Everyone goes to Drew League now, but it used to be Rucker Park, Entertainers Basketball Classic. Kobe wants to go play. Like, how'd you wind up? Were you on his team? How'd you wind up on his team? Were you playing there all summer? Like, what's the background on this?
It's crazy you mentioned that because I hadn't even thought of, I mean, I posted that picture, but now talking about being able to play against and with LeBron, being able to play against and with Jordan, and being able to play against Kobe is the highlight of my career, you know, the highlights of my career in retrospect. And Kobe, I was coming into my freshman year. I was down there at that, the summer program that they had going on. And there was a guy named Rodney who was really close with the guy who runs Source Magazine. And they had a team, Byron Mouton, who had just graduated, was playing on it. And the Source Magazine team was playing against Kobe's team. I think Kobe was on Terror Squad, so I think it was Fat Joe's team, if I remember right. And he invited me to play, and it happened to be the same day that Kobe came. And so I'm walking, I park in Harlem, and I'm walking down the street, and I hear, "Mike Dunleavy!" And me and a couple of my boys that I drove down looked over and were crying. we're just dying. And then I get into the park, and it's the environment there was just, I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, think back on how crazy this place was. I mean, it was people in the trees and the fences, blocks and blocks. I mean, if you look outside of the park, there was people flooded the streets for blocks. And I was able to get in the game, and I guarded Kobe one or two possessions. And when that time where he threw the ball off the backboard, there's a video of when he was there, and I was going to move. And then I'm like, I'd step back, and he dunked it. He went to the line because he was doing his like dribble between the legs, between the legs. And the guy on the mic was like, three rings, kind of, get him. And everybody's standing up. You know. And he gave me a hezzy, and he went middle, and I ripped him, and they called it. Of course, that call. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
But it was just an incredible. It was an incredible environment, man. It was unbelievable. And then after, I was invited to the after party that Source was throwing at Luan, which was super cool to me, because if you remember that Jay-Z song where he's like, "I'm in Luan, getting my groove on, buying out whatever it was." That's exactly what I was doing. And at that time, I was a big hip hop fan. Benzino was in there. I think Benzino was having his birthday, and Tony Sunshine, who was a big singer. And I love hip hop, and I always love hip hop. And one thing people that know me closest know about me is I have bars, man. Really genuinely nice. And I've actually written hip hop music and freestyle and stuff since I was in like sixth grade. So I was in there freestyling for those guys, and it was an incredible night. And I did say I was 18, so hopefully that this, I'm not gonna get anybody in trouble, but the fact that I was able to be in that environment at 18, it was pretty incredible.
Absolutely. I got the DVD. I got the Entertainers Basketball Classic DVD because I used to put them out after each season. So I'm going to go back and watch it and see if I can find you out there.
If you check out the Kobe at Rucker Park on YouTube, they have a clip of when Kobe was at Rucker Park. And part of that clip is they show him throw it off the backboard.
So yeah.
In the game. And
that game got rained out, right? You guys didn't even finish the game.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe, it was kind of raining, and you know, the guy he was with was a little bit concerned because the court was a little bit wet, but Kobe wanted to play, obviously, and it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's fresh off winning three NBA championships, and Kobe's running there in the summertime. That's pretty crazy. Just goes to show you Kobe right there. So I know we're short on time. We got to get up out of here, but I always give my guests a chance to say something before we get up out of here. So I'm going to let you say a piece. If there's anything you want to clear up. I think we cleared up all my questions I had about like the Maryland fight and Jordan.
Listen, I was able to vent a little bit, man. So
yeah.
It's cool to be able to look back. And first and foremost, I appreciate you for having me on. You know, it's a blast to be able to reflect on some of these times, and I appreciate the questions, man. Awesome questions. You know, anytime that I can help in any way, please reach out. And to anybody who's listening, young players, always reach out if you have any questions, you know, about anything. I don't have a lot of social media, but I have Facebook. And if you send me a message on Facebook, I will respond. So any questions about anything that you have to any young players out there, any parents, you know, at this point, I just want to be able to help inspire young players and, you know, be able to give back to where I'm from. You know, I'm really passionate about Maine. I'm really passionate about Maine basketball, the people here. So it's a big goal for me to be able to give back to the game here in Maine. So please feel free to reach out. And again, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I really, really genuinely enjoyed it. Some great questions. It's fun to be able to reflect.
No doubt. And ladies and gentlemen, great article in the Portland Press Herald. I think it was the Portland Press Herald, right? This past weekend about Nick.
Yeah, Sunday. Yep.
Yeah. Great article there. Go check that out. And hey, real quick, what time are you going to be at Payson Park? When can kids go down there and catch a run?
I mean, look, they don't even play over there anymore.
You got to start it up. You got to just start it up.
It's a ghost town over there. But to be fair, if I played one game on cement right now, it'd be a wrap for my knees. So. But yeah, man, it's you know, we do have something that we do every summer called SummerSlam. We usually do it the first week in August. It may not be able to go on this year based upon the circumstances, but we will do something, whether it's a giveaway or something along those lines. So it's free. It's for kids, you know, from the ages of 6 all the way through high school. And we give out school supplies and have professional people talking and great coaches and free food and live music. And for me, the whole point is it's free. And so, you know, keep an eye out for that on my Facebook. And we have a website, truesports.org, which is the nonprofit that me and a friend of mine started here in SummerSlam. We also do Winter Jam, but that's coming up on hopefully the first week in August. If we don't do it this year, we're going to have a distancing giveaway where we're just going to give away stuff to kids. Kids from neighborhoods that don't have the money to go to camps and don't have the money to get nice gear. We give away gear. We give away school supplies. We give away food. So we're going to do something no matter what. But just keep an eye out for that because, you know, again, it's free and it's a really great day.
Absolutely. One of the best to do it and doing great things for his community in the state of Maine. So shout out to Nick for coming through on Big Time Hoops. This is big for us. So thank you very much. Make sure everyone's checking out previous episodes up there on YouTube, on Facebook. Check out Instagram. We got all kinds of good stuff on there as well. But until next week, that is it. We'll see you next time.
Take care.